slightly square of face to get that extra 5 or 6 yards out of it, and it's a gem. It's a gem. Oh, can you believe it? What a response after that double drop on the last.
Ricky Fowler, a winner in Abu Dhabi this past weekend, thanks in large part to that eagle hole out during the final round. Don't forget to log on to golfchannel.com to see where that shot landed in our list of top 5 European Tour shots from the week. Welcome in to another edition of Monday Scramble. I am Will Gray, joined by golfchannel.com senior writers Randall Mell and Ryan Lavner. Gentlemen, welcome. Glad to have you. And Ricky Fowler, back in the winner's circle. What do we think, Lav? This is his 4th win since May. He keeps winning against elite fields and in elite fashion, and now he's up to world number 4.
I mean, the hole out on the 8th hole, the chip-in on the 71st hole of the tournament, this guy just seems to have a real sense for the moment, the ability to close out when the pressure's at its most intense. I was really, really blown away here. 4 of the top 6 in the world were in the field here. He gets another W.
Yeah, creating so much excitement that people can't see, but Ryan is wearing Ricky's tight shoes right
now. I'm not wearing the joggers. I refuse to wear the joggers.
He loves them.
But you think the high tops will take off?
I do think the high tops will take off. I really do. Maybe not Ricky style with the strap-on part, but I think Brooks Koepka certainly could.
I particularly enjoyed the European commenters when they described Fowler's outfit this week as elasticated trousers with high-top trainer shoes. I thought, let's put that on a billboard and put orange Puma around it and see how many of those we
saw. I don't think it's going to make it to the PGA Champions, though.
I don't think the flat bell is either.
No. With Fowler up to world number 4 now, do you think that he was kind of feeling slighted coming into this week? It was all Jordan and Rory, world number 1, world number 3. And, oh, by the way, Ricky Fowler is going to round out this threesome to start the week. And he got off to a slow start, kind of kept himself in contention. Then after those fog delays in that third round, shot a 65, really got himself into contention, took the lead after 54 holes. And then he managed to close the deal. But do you feel like he was kind of had a little extra motivation, like we saw at TPC Sawgrass when the overrated stuff came out, that now he was playing third wheel to Jordan and Rory this week?
Yeah, I was going to say, we know how he responds when he feels slighted, so maybe he should figure out he can be insulted more. Maybe he should get his people around him to hurl more insults at him. I think probably more motivated, though. Just listening to him when I was at the Deutsche Bank at the end of the year, you know, when you listen to him, he was motivated to join those guys, Rory and Jason, in the conversation there, and Jordan, obviously. But I think it wasn't so much a slight at the time. I think he felt like he didn't deserve to be there, and he has said he needs to win the major to get there, but I think he's more motivated than slighted to get into that company.
This entire week, though, this is going to be the first of many battles between Rory and Jordan, and then Ricky Fowler. Hello, don't mind me, I'm going to win my 4th tournament since last May. I mean, I think this was a big statement victory for him, that maybe whether you want to throw him in this big 3, big 4, it doesn't really matter. The fact of the matter is he has the 4th most wins since February of last year.
What I like about it is that we've seen both Jason and Ricky now become more comfortable where they didn't appear to be comfortable. We saw them basically choke under pressure, but it's a learning progress. We saw Jason Day throw away some chances at major championships, and you know, if he would have not won at the PGA, he would have had the 3.
They were underachievers their entire career,
right?
Until the past 52
weeks. I still say that the overrated stuff that came out about Fowler at TPC Sawgrass was totally on.
Correct.
Yes, absolutely. At that point in his career, he was overrated.
Well,
he is no longer overrated.
Just the kick in the pants that he might have needed to take his game to the next level. Obviously, the swing changes with Butch Hartman.
Right.
Are going to help, but having that little bit of a motivation or edge helped him in this regard.
What stood out before that, the Players' Championship, what stood out in your mind? To me, it was his two showdowns with Tiger. No, it was competitively. It was his two showdowns with Tiger. It was being with Tiger at the Memorial and all the hype about that, and he shoots 84 alongside Tiger. Then it's being alongside Tiger.
Yeah, the Quail Hollow victory over Rory.
That doesn't stick out in your mind
when he stuffs a wedge in overtime.
No, come on, Randy.
But the last two times, that was a long time ago. The last two times we saw him was also with Tiger at the Arnold Palmer Invitational when he's showing down with Tiger at the 16th, and he hits two balls in the water. Tell me those didn't stand out in your mind.
He has wilted in the big moment, I think, is the point you're trying to make there.
And I think that fed into the overrated thing.
But no one right now is slamming the door as emphatically as Ricky Fowler. If you go back to that big statement he made at the Players' Championship with that finish, beating Kuchar with another stuffed wedge in Scotland, He had a showdown with Stenson at TPC Boston, Randy, when you were there, and he just outraced a red-hot Henrik Stenson. When he's winning, he's the winner. He's going and getting these events by the throat and taking them. He's not backing into trophies.
Yeah, that's what stands out about is how comfortable he's now getting in a place that's very difficult to get comfortable. That is the back nine on Sunday, because the players, how much more comfortable can you get under pressure? He was 8-under the final 10 holes and then birdied 3 of the last 4 at the Scottish. And then, you know, he's getting so comfortable. And I think that bodes well to see him in duels and hunts with Jordan and Jason and Rory, and to keep seeing them. And it bodes well for his run at a major.
If the tour had a statistic for, like, clutchness, Ricky Fowler
strokes
would rank,
gain clutch.
Yeah, stroke train clutch. That he would rank very high up there. It's just something about him. He doesn't seem fazed by the moment. He doesn't get rattled. He knows he can pull off the shots, and then he executes. I think that's a learned skill, perhaps, but it's something that Jason Day has learned how to close the door, especially in Canada last year. Jordan certainly has that skill. Rory has that skill to kind of distance himself from the field. So that's really the defining characteristic of this next generation of stars, is that they're not fazed by the big moment, and they know how to slam the door.
At the Deutsche Bank Championship, I talked to Davis Love about Ricky before Ricky won it, and he said that he thought that Ricky is, you know, an adrenaline junkie, and it goes with the motocross thing, and that he needs sort of that kind of thrilling situations to get his attention, because he said when Ricky's bored, like early in the rounds, and we kind of saw that this weekend, he did not look good in the first round against Rory and Jordan. He looked like the weak third in that group. But Davis's opinion was that he's an adrenaline junkie and he does thrive in those situations.
Kind of like Phil in that regard. Then it sounds very much like Phil. Just Ricky's a better
Ricky's
closer.
Playing a little better right now.
The other thing that I think about Ricky though is he had not really been in these situations enough. And that's what his caddy, Joe Scavrin, told me at Deutsche Bank after he won it. He goes, you know, he does enjoy those situations, but it is a learning curve. And he really, if you look at it, he had not put himself in that situation enough to be comfortable. But now that he has, he is getting comfortable.
Do you think, real quick, if you're rating strokes gained clutch, do you put Fowler ahead of Spieth right now?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say Spieth still holds the edge because he's done it in bigger tournaments.
Right. It's almost like you'd have to give more weight to the majors. If whatever meter you were using, you'd have to give more weight to the
majors. We're making things up on the fly here, so we can do our rules as we want. I have to express a pet peeve, and we can discuss this. The whole big three, big four, big 11.
I'm glad we're going to get into this.
I'm so over this. This is Fowler's win shows what goes wrong when you try and box things in to the big three. Guess what? There's a lot of really good players out there. There's a lot of guys that can win tournaments, a lot of guys that can win majors, and you can't talk about all of them every single week. But you try and create this upper-level stratosphere with Jason Day and Rory and Jordan Spieth, and now, well, maybe we need to put him in as making a big four. And what if Bubba Watson wins the Masters? Now it's a big five, and we're going to get to a big 17 by the time the Olympics roll around. We need to stop doing it. It's hard because golf is an individual sport. The players don't always line up their schedules where you get all the players playing every single week, but we can't keep trying to pigeonhole things like this.
I have a confession to make. I was one who said Ricky needed a major. That's it. That's the only way he's going to get into this exclusive club of the big three. He does not belong until he wins a major. Now, who cares? This is an imaginary club that we created. There's no perks for being in the big three. It's not like you start a major championship with a three-stroke lead. It's just something that we made up in our minds. The fact of the matter is Ricky one of the four best players in golf right now? Yes, absolutely. If Dustin Johnson wins Torrey Pines and then he knocks off a couple other, perhaps Doral again, is he now going to be part of this big five? The fact of the matter is Ricky is one of the top four players in the world, and that's good enough for me, regardless of this big delineation.
Yeah, whatever you call them, clearly these young guys, these four young guys are separating themselves, though. So, you know, big four or whatever, they're separating themselves with the number of times they've won and on the big stages that they're winning.
I still think if you try and use big, whatever, insert your number, it's always going to pine back to Jack, Arnie, and Gary. And that's an impossible standard for anyone in this contemporary game. And I just wish that we could just say, listen, there's a lot of good players. Let them play. Sometimes Ricky's going to win. Sometimes Jordan's going to win, Rory's going to get his, and see how it plays out.
Yeah, Fab Four? What do you got for us?
I don't want to call it anything.
Yeah, just
it's
stop
just they're
trying.
Really, really good.
Right, exactly. Because that's what happened this week. We tried to put him all in a box. We said it's Jordan versus Rory, and then Ricky Fowler somehow is slighted, even though he came in as the sixth best player in the world and fourth best in the field, and it comes out as a surprise victory because he wasn't in, as Lav said, he wasn't in the imaginary club on Wednesday. Now he's there on Monday. Maybe he'll be there on Thursday. Who knows?
Right. It just doesn't make any sense to me. There's a lot of really good players. They're all going to win their fair share of titles. And, oh, yeah, there's another wave of guys, Patrick Reed, Brooks Koepka, so on and so forth. They're going to get theirs, too. Yeah. Just let it go.
Yeah. Do you think it will transfer for Ricky, that it will transfer into the majors? He had the great run of majors 2 years ago where he was.
It's so hard to win. There are so many deserving players that you think, well, this guy is good enough to win a major. He should win a major. Ricky's certainly in that category, but you only get four cracks at the apple a year. And he could be deserving of a Sergio has been deserving of a major for 15 years, and he's still waiting.
Yeah, like certainly seems like Ricky is ready. 2014, he top five in all four majors. Last year, he actually started to win some tournaments for the first time in a couple of years. It seems like he's ready, but like you said, Will, he's got six top 15 finishes now in his last 11 Grand Slam events. That doesn't mean he's going to win one this year. It just means he's putting himself in position to win them.
And I think the fact that he's gotten comfortable on big stages against really top-notch caliber competition that...
Seems like his time is coming, yes. Doesn't mean it's going to.
If we're thinking in terms of Fowler, which major do you feel like sets up best for his game overall in the next 5 years, let's say?
Well, if his putter gets hot, I mean, I like him in all four. I think the Open Championship, just because his arsenal of shots is deeper than a lot of other players. If it gets windy, if it gets rainy, he's really not going to be fazed by that kind of environment. So I would go with the Open just because... there aren't as many players who have that skill set.
Yeah, good field player who can move the ball, hit different trajectories. Yeah.
I might lean a little towards PGA, but I see what you're saying.
Just because the practice round he's got there?
He has one practice round at Baltusrol. No, I just think he fares better in tournaments where the winning score is 15 under or lower. He can win shootouts. He has a better shot of shooting a 65 on a PGA course than shooting a 70 on a U.S. Open course, even though I know he did it at Pinehurst. But I just think that one he has a better chance for.
Yeah, he seems less of a grinded-out guy
right. And
more of a, I'm going to step on your throat now and go as deep as I can.
All right, so other guys, now that we have the also-rans besides Ricky Fowler, Rory McIlroy, T3, Jordan Spieth, T5, and Abu Dhabi. Pretty solid start. What did you have any takeaways from either of those, both of them? What do you think?
Rory, at times, looked like it was mid-season form. I mean, he was hitting his driver really nicely. He led the field in greens in regulation. I just think it was a couple putts here or there. He wasn't completely sharp on the greens, but this is nothing new for what he does in Abu Dhabi. I think it's seven top five finishes now.
Yeah, at least he's not
with
second.
No wins in the desert. But, Randy, do you have a takeaway from what you like there from
just
Rory?
Just watching that first round with Rory, that was impressive how he was driving at 25-30 yards past Jordan Spieth every time. It had to have had an impact and effect on Jordan to see that. And it just shows you when Rory is driving the ball at his best,
it's
going to be tough for anybody to beat him. And but what stood out also was it is the first event, his lack of feel on the greens, but I'm making probably too much of that. But that was a round. His ball striking was phenomenal. You would have thought he would have shot a 64.
Nothing that happened last week made me change my opinion that this is going to be a huge year for Rory. I think that's safe to say that.
I agree. I would agree with that. Are we at all concerned, Spieth coming off that T5 finish? He talked, and Rex Hoggart had a good article on this at golfchannel.com, that he's tired and he's mentally worn down. It is January 25th. We have the globetrotting world number one who is embracing his status at the top of the game. He's playing in Abu Dhabi last week. He's now going to Singapore this week before coming back over to the U.S. to start his West Coast swing at Pebble and then Riviera as well. If he's gassed right now, what's he going to look like in June?
It's hard to blame him for cashing in on what was one of the best six or seven seasons we've ever seen in golf. But, yeah, you're right, Will. He's gassed in January. There's not a whole lot of downtime here.
Justin Rose hasn't hit a competitive shot yet,
right.
And Jordan Spieth is tired.
Yeah, Spieth is playing Singapore, and then it's not like he's going to relax at home for a month. He's going to go play Pebble, and he's going to play Riviera, and he's going to play
He's probably going to
play the match play because it's in Austin. He's probably going to play Houston because he likes to play the week before the major. And then it's Augusta. it just snowballs from there. It's already going to be a busy summer. So, yeah, I am concerned. I think it's safe to say he's not going to be taking 5 trips overseas in a 3-month span anymore.
It isn't just that he's so busy. It's also the way his life has changed in that he is the focus when he walks. The moment he walks onto a property for a tournament, he's the focus, and the demands are different. The expectations are different. I think those are exhausting, mentally exhausting, too, because he talked about being mentally exhausted. It's why Tiger Woods didn't play 28 times a year, too.
Yeah, yeah.
He's certainly learning his lesson now at age 22.
Yeah, if you look back at what Tiger did in that position as world number one, as the alpha dog in the game, he had a set schedule. Everyone knew his schedule, and he did not deviate. These are the tournaments I'm going to play. These are the weeks off I'm going to take. And you're right. Spieth is learning the lesson the hard way, it seems, right now. And you would, the reaction to this is, oh, well, let's look at his schedule. Maybe he can take a week off here or there. But you're right, Lav. If you look at the upcoming 2 or 3 months, there's no hole that you can say, well, he can skip this one, he can skip that one.
And then if you do start skipping events, then you're not fresh for, then you're not informed for when you actually do return to schedule and you want to peek at those events. Rory's gone through this too over the past couple of years. I remember he played in like that one-on-one showdown with Tiger, and he talked about kind of scaling back his schedule because he wanted to be fresher for some of the big events. Who do you think, though, is better equipped to handle this kind of fame and the spotlight and the international travel? A guy like Rory, who seems to enjoy the fame more, or a guy like Spieth, who is a little bit more guarded and he seems to be more grounded in his personal life?
That's a great question, because to me, their mental strength and are both, formidable in different ways. And I just like being around them. I like how open they are. I like how they're two of the best interviews in golf, and they'll give you honest opinions. Who's built more for it? I think they both handle it in their own ways. I don't know. I'm prepared to say it. I think Rory has been there longer now, and when he talked about how what Jordan was going to face after winning 2 majors, he knew what he was talking about, and we will see now how Jordan, we'll get to see how Jordan handles it this year.
Rory's 26 now, but at the end of last year, I remember at thefries.com, he talked about how many airline miles he logged and how tired he was, and he really, at age 26, needs to start dialing it back because his body doesn't quite handle that. Jordan's been ahead of the curve basically his entire life, and for him to figure out how to start managing some international travel at the age of 22, I think is going to bode well for his future.
I want them to stay fresh. I want both of them to stay fresh.
I want them to stay young forever. Right?
Yes. Well, the reason is that it's like there's with Jordan, it's so much fun to watch him play. It's like there's this gravitating thing to him where he makes you feel close to the action, the way he talks to his golf ball. It's fun. It isn't like you're watching him. It's like you're walking with him. Now, if a guy gets fried, it isn't going to be as much fun to watch him. You're going to see the irritation in his game. And right now, I like, and Rory's really the same way. Rory is fun to watch, and you feel, it's like you're walking with him.
Yeah. Jordan did look frustrated in Abu Dhabi. His putter was at times uncooperative. And he still had a top 5 finish. He pair of weekend 68, still got him top 5. That shows just how good and really the character of the kid to be able to battle back like that.
I still give a little bit of the edge, going back to your original question, to Rory, just because, Randy, as you said, he's been in the spotlight a little longer. It's hard to believe that it's been 5 years since he won that U.S. Open at Congressional. It does not feel like it's been 5 years since he's been in that echelon as a major champion.
And he's done it having to handle some of the issues Jordan hasn't. The controversy over equipment, the controversy leaving his agent, the controversy with the girlfriend.
Yep.
He's gone through a lot more of that Jordan hasn't faced yet. And Jordan's a great kid, but something will come along that he's going to have to deal with.
Yeah. So no rest for the weary in terms of Ricky Fowler flying right from Abu Dhabi over to the Farmers Insurance Open. Lav, I know you're going to be heading out bright and early tomorrow morning.
5:20 a.m.
to San Diego.
Thank you, TSA pre-check.
There you go. Covering the Farmers Insurance Open for us. So in addition to Ricky Fowler, we have Jason Day, world number 2, as defending champion. Maybe we need to talk Jason versus Ricky and spice up that
rivalry. Who is really in the big three?
But, Justin Rose is making his 2016 debut. Dustin Johnson's also in the field. Hideki's going to be teeing it up. So what are your thoughts as you're heading out west to cover this event?
I really do think that this is a big statement week for Jason Day. You've already seen Jordan pick off a win. You saw Ricky get the W now in Abu Dhabi. Even Rory seemed to, as I said, show glimpses of that midseason form. Jason Day looked pretty rusty when he played at Kapalua. He still got a top 10 finish, but that was based largely on a final round. I think he needs to play well, contend, get himself going a little bit in 2016.
Yeah, I agree with that. And just to add to it, this was kind of fun because it used to be the season didn't feel like it began till Tiger teed it up the first time. And it pretty much was Torrey, right?
Yeah.
And now, look, I think that one thing that the PGA Tour schedule lacked was that big bang opening. There wasn't like an opening day like Major League Baseball. But watching Hyundai, it felt like a big bang opening with Jordan winning that. And we're talking golf already at Abu Dhabi. There's two big events before we even get to Torrey, before three big events now, before Tiger even, we don't even know when he's going to tee it up.
Yeah, it actually feels like we've seen important golf and golf that matters. And that usually wasn't the case until either Tiger returned or probably Doral, the WGC event.
Well, that right. is
Everyone was congregating for the first time.
Yeah, we will see. It could be the season might not start until maybe about August if we're waiting for Tiger to tee it up. But Jason Day, the issue with Jason Day is he teed it up at Hyundai for the first time since the President's Cup. His wife had a kid. He's had some family time. He didn't play some of the off-season events, quote-unquote, that he usually does, Shark Shootout and Tiger's event and so forth. So the rust was certainly there. Another guy who teed it up for the first time in forever last week who had no rust is Phil Mickelson, 45 years young, coming in with a T3, best finish since June at the FedEx St. Jude Classic.
Who could forget?
Yeah, of course. So Lefty actually showing some consistency. His first round or first tournaments with Andrew Getson after ditching Butch Harmon. Is there reason to be optimistic about Phil heading into 16?
I was actually really encouraged just based on the fact of how he had performed previously. He was a little bit better at the President's Cup, but in stroke play events really last fall, It wasn't good at all, and that kind of necessitated the change. But I think the Career Builder Challenge and the T3 finish there also showed how much further Phil has to go and how hard it is going to be for him to win. Look, he was pretty close to perfect. I mean, he was second strokes gained tee to green. He chipped in four times, or he holed out four times.
He holed out one wedge from 100 yards.
That was a career best for Phil, and he still couldn't win what was a C-level event. So I think there's still room for growth there, but once you start getting all those great players, it's going to be really, really hard to win. He needs to be perfect, and that's a lot to ask for a 45-year-old.
Yeah, his confidence is high, though. That's but when isn't it?
Who it's has always more confidence? High at the beginning of the season.
He can be in the middle of a slump, and nobody has more confidence than Phil. But now we're seeing a little bit of the numbers matching it. So.
It's the one pause for concern that I have with Phil, even after it was a good week and admittedly a better week than I expected from him.
Absolutely.
This week. But every post-round interview, the talk was so technical. He's talking about his swing plane. He's talking about trying to get the driver grooved and getting things back on track and swinging.
Face awareness,
divot patterns, waist high to waist high. It's like he took a calculus class in December and he's still knee deep in the books. This is Phil Mickelson, the ultimate touch player, the guy that can just go out there and kind of like Bubba, where he sees the shots in his head and makes them happen. And now he is really into the micro aspects of the swing in the game.
There were certainly some shades of Tiger there, wasn't there? The glute activation, the
release patterns.
He talked about divot entry points. I mean, it was a little bit strange, but I think he was also explaining for people what exactly he had gone through, because to the naked eye, his swing doesn't look all that different now under Andrew Getson, but apparently it is. I read somewhere that Phil felt like he was trying to swing like Jim Furyk. Like, that's how off his plane was.
Well, he also talked about how he thought the plane is 12 inches different. Well, if you saw Brando analyze it, it's not. It's maybe a couple inches. But for Phil, it feels like it's that much difference. And it almost seems like he's talking to himself a little bit, isn't it?
He's trying to convince himself, yeah. And like you said, that he needs to see perhaps that the swings are drastically different to rationalize the change, to rationalize the fact that he's gone through a couple years of substandard results and to give himself reason to think that this year is going to be different. Yes or no, real quick, does Phil win a PGA Tour event in 2016?
I think yes, but it would be like a Memphis or a Wells Fargo type tournament. I don't think he's going to win a quote unquote.
As you said, he's not going to get the field's only going to get stronger from this week on in terms of the events he's going to play in. And he, as you said, he played pretty well.
Yeah, I still think there's some room for sharpening his game. But like I said, he's got to be perfect, and the big concern is the putter.
Yeah, Phil, I think he can still win. I don't see him winning a major. I think that window's closed. And I don't think he's the top 10 in a Ryder Cup. You probably have to rely on the captain's pick. But, yeah, and I still think on a given week, it all comes together.
There's still way too much talent there.
Yeah. You don't think Phil can ever win a major? He's going to be contending at Augusta until he's 54 if he wants to. You tell me there's not one more roar coming down the back when he's holing a wedge from 100 yards?
I won't be shocked, but the odds are, if you're asking me if he's going to, I'd say no, probably not. Because, again, he could catch lightning in the bottle. Phil is unpredictable.
Second last year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, yes, he can, but I think there's a reason that Hale Irwin's the oldest winner of a U.S. Open at 45, and, you know.
It just doesn't get easier to make putts once you get in your late 40s.
I don't think he's ever going to win a U.S. Open, but I could see him making one more run at a green jacket.
At a green jacket or winning a green jacket? I think he's got a couple runs left in him.
It goes back to Randy's question. If you're asking me right now, yes or no, will he win a major, I would say no. But it wouldn't surprise me, and I do think that he will be in contention coming down the back nine on Sunday, where we're going to sit there and say Phil has a legitimate shot at a fourth green jacket. I think that will happen.
Yeah, part of Phil's appeal is that he's so unpredictable. Every performance is so unexpected. I think that's really the allure of Phil Mickelson. It wouldn't surprise me at all, like you said, if he can do it one more time.
So Phil came up just short in Palm Springs, but the guy that left with the trophy after a couple holes of overtime is Jason Duffner. First win since the 2013 PGA Championship. He's gone through some struggles on the course, off the course, but now he's back in the winner's circle. I looked this up this morning. It's hard to believe. He got to eighth in the world when he won at Oak Hill, and he started this year ranked 135th. That's a big fall. Now he's back up to 60 after winning the Career Builder Challenge. What are your thoughts on what this might mean for Duffner moving forward in 2016?
Okay, it was a rough few years. He really, really struggled with the putter. He had the neck injury where he thought that was possibly going to be career-ending.
Yeah.
Obviously, he had the messy divorce that kind of played out publicly, and he didn't really speak to the press for the rest of 2015. But he said he needed to believe that he was a great player again. It just shows how fragile some of these guys' psyches can be, even if you are a major champion. I think this was a huge turning point for Jason Duffner. I think he's actually going to be on that U.S. Ryder Cup team this year.
Really? Yeah. I do not.
Yeah, the heart's such a great X factor. You can look at somebody's swing, but you can't know what's going on in their heart, what they're feeling, and in their head. And I think those were huge factors with him. And he talked about it, just getting those right again.
I need to go back to this. You think Duffner's going to make the Ryder Cup team? You think he's making on points?
I do think he's going to make it on points, and here's the reason why.
There's a lot of really good players for the American side.
He said something very interesting to PGAtour.com last year. He said that he's going to play a ton this year. Why is he going to play a ton? One, he's healthy. Two, he actually feels like he can contend again. And three, and this is the most revealing part, he said, I don't have anything else to do.
There is no reason
why I can't play 28 or 29 times this year, because what am I? I don't have a wife anymore. I don't have any kids. These are my friends. This is my brotherhood on the PGA Tour. I'm going to play as much as I can because I have nothing else to do. My swing doesn't really change week to week. I think he's going to make it on points just because he's going to accrue a lot of them.
That's the path that Danny Lee took to the President's Cup last year. He played 36 times. The PGA Tour just played every single week. Yeah. So you have a point there. I stand corrected.
For a guy who has very little facial expressions, he's fun to watch, isn't he? Because he's just so low-key, it's almost comical to watch him pick away his way around the golf course.
Yeah. Apparently, Duffner currently eighth on the Ryder Cup's point list after this win, so that goes to your point that he's got a head start. One guy that, I'm telling you, this is going to happen, Kevin Na, T3, red-hot continuing. He's up to 12th on the points list. I'm going to be banging this drum for the next 6 months I want to see him, but I am so upset that those points in the fall didn't count. Playoff loss at the Fries, tie for second at Shriners, and a third place finish in Malaysia got him the same amount of Ryder Cup points as you and I got at eating breakfast this morning.
Now,
and that is ridiculous. Those fields were better than they have been in years past. They were solid. I put them on a par with what you had this week in Palm Springs.
100%.
And he's a guy that's going to be up there. He's up to 20th in the world. He's going to keep playing really well. He's going to be a bubble guy, and I think that the lack of points for those events will cost Kevin Na a spot in the Ryder Cup.
Look, I do think it is ridiculous that they didn't change the points. I do think that's going to change after the 2016 Ryder Cup here.
So it's only this group that's really getting...
I think so, yeah. I think they're going to see how ridiculous this is. But Davis Love is a smart guy. If it's a tiebreaker between some of these guys, he's going to look at a couple top five finishes that he may have had in the fall, weighing against perhaps a guy who's red hot really hasn't done anything the rest of the year. I think Davis Love is going to factor in the fall, even if you're not exactly getting points for it.
Yeah. So how upset were you? Were you busting things in Jay's office?
Not quite. We're not there yet. Once we get to about August,
I'd love
and he's,
to see Kevin Na in a Ryder Cup setting.
I'm telling you, it would be a secret
it would
weapon.
Be fascinating.
If you put him against Ian Poulter in a singles match, I think that could be an American secret weapon.
Like a physical confrontation might break out. Yeah. I think we could all root for that.
I just think that he's going to, there are so many guys up there, that if you're talking about guys from on that bubble from 8 to 15, you still got Kuchar and Haas and Koepka and Reed and J.B. Holmes. There's a lot of good players that still have to get in the groove for 2016. But I think that Na is going to stay right around that bubble, you know, 10 to 15, something like that. And it's, unless he wins an event, which he could, but unless he wins an event, I think he's going to be just on the outside.
Kevin Na. Pick who's going to be on the team. Kevin Na, Jason Duffner, or Justin Thomas?
Justin Thomas is almost a lock for me.
Is almost a lock,
yes,
even though he did not get points for his victory.
No, because I think, I am bullish on his 2016 season. B, I think that he is the quintessential fresh blood pick that even if he's not going to make it, I could see DL3 reaching into his bag and saying, bring the kid.
We'll have to look to see if that would be the youngest Ryder Cup team ever.
I mean, it'd be close. You go back to 2010 when Fowler made it at about 12 years old.
Isn't that probably a good thing, though?
Yeah, it's plan A is not working. Let's go to plan B.
They don't have any scars. That might be a good thing.
You give me Jordan Spieth, Patrick Reed, Justin Thomas, and some sort of rotation there.
Love it.
I'll take my chances.
Love it.
But we will see. All right, so let's shift gears here. This week is the first event of the LPGA season. Randy, I know you are as excited as we are. We're going to the Bahamas.
Probably more so. Look at this smile.
Going to the Bahamas for the Pure Silk. So for those of us like Lavner and I who are not as in with the LPGA crowd as you are, give us some thoughts on the 2016 season, some players to watch this week, and some storylines of the Bahamas.
Yeah, Pure Silk is leading off where last year Coates did, but they flip-flopped it. So that created a choice for Lydia Ko as the world number one because she's immediately after Coates, she's going overseas to defend titles at the New Zealand Women's Open and the Australian Women's Open, and she didn't want to play four in a row. The world number one is not going to play this week at the Pure Silk Bahamas. And part of that and the choice between Coates and Pure Silk and talking to David Ledbetter, her coach, was just that, you know, the winds can be so severe at the Bahamas, just a little more comfortable at Coates, but it was more a scheduling thing, too, and not wanting to play four in a row with an overseas trip, 4 weeks in a row with an overseas trip that included two defending titles. So
aren't all the top players facing that dilemma, though?
What do you mean as far as...
But
they're not all defending titles, and they're not all playing. They're not all going to play. New Zealand is not an LPGA event. It's just a European women's event that she's, you know, obviously it's in New Zealand, her homeland, so she's going to go there. And so that factors into the difficulty in scheduling early. But it's still a strong field in Pure Silk. Number two, Enby Park. Number three, Stacey Lewis. Number four, Lexi Thompson. Michelle Weiser, Paula Kramer. Se-young Kim, the defending champion, Ho-Joo Kim, it's a really strong field. So a good start for the year. Yeah. Michelle Wee got sick there and very early in the year, and her whole year just kind of went down from there. So I think everyone's looking to see how Michelle starts her year.
And I want to talk a little bit more about Lydia Ko. The Golf Digest just came out with that top earners of 2015. She barely cracked the list with a couple million dollars. And I know we're just throwing
just
out just a couple million. But compared to Jordan Spieth, who's on top of the men's game with $52 million, what does Lydia Ko have to do to gain some more marketability in the marketplace and really become that next transcendent star in not just women's golf, but women's sports?
Yeah, it's a theme in women's golf. You know, it's just that the money's hard to come by. They don't have as many endorsements or as many equipment deals. It's just an issue. But, yeah, it seems like in the women's game, Michelle Wee is still the needle mover in that sport. And it's, you know, maybe there is still this success factor. It's a combination. If you can have a real cover girl type player who leads the tour, you know, then maybe some of the
dynamic personality, a dynamic game. Is that what
but
you
she
mean?
Has? Yeah, and she has the personality. If her fans love her, she's just kind and sweet and just a really good person and a great player. To be able to handle everything that she handles at her age. And she's got a little bit of that Jordan and Rory and being very personable. Thing I love about Lydia is for a number one player in the world, sometimes you're talking to somebody who's in high demand and you get them for a few minutes and it's like they're not even looking at you. It's like they're looking right through you. Lydia looks at you. She really looks at you in the eye and she's talking to you. I hope she never loses that. But you know, I don't know what the magic formula is for that. Maybe if she wins all of the majors, maybe it takes something like that. She could. Yeah, she's the game.
So we've got Lydia and NB kind of the race at the top. It's been dominating the LPGA headlines for the better part of a year. But now, is this the year that the Americans step to the front? We see Stacey Lewis, Paula Creamer, Michelle Wee, Christy Kerr. Allison Lee, perhaps. Is this the year that the Americans start to win some more majors and get back to the top spots in the world rankings?
You know, I've written a lot about the swoon of the American women, and then they actually made a little run a couple of years ago, won a fair number of events, and did well last year. And the year that Stacey and Michelle Wee, Brittany Lincecum, the women have won their share of majors, but the South Korean field is just so deep and so strong. They are the powerhouse in all of golf. They're the force in golf is South Korean women, and the Americans. It's the Koreans and the Americans are a distant number two. Yeah. To answer your question,
Brandon, give me a breakout player for 2006. I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but everyone knows about Lydia and NB and
Brooke
Michelle
Henderson
Wee
last
and
year.
Lexi. And Brooke Henderson last year would qualify certainly as a breakout player. Is there somebody who's on your radar you think could make some noise this year?
You know, Jarena Pillar. I think this could be a breakout year for her. The confidence gained in the Solheim Cup. Yeah, I remember Julie Engster when Michelle Wee was a captain's pick by Beth Daniel at Rich Harvest Farms, and Michelle at the time wasn't playing that well. She was picked by Beth Daniel. She had a fabulous Solheim Cup, and I remember Julie Engster saying, this experience, she will win before the year's out, and she was right. Michelle Wee won the next year, I think she said, but Michelle Wee broke through and won. I think Jarena Pillar could be in that similar position. She has a lot of talent, and I don't think Jarena really knows how good she is, and making that clutch putt.
That was the putt of the year in 2015.
It was. If she doesn't make it, it wasn't the putt that clinched it and won it, but if she doesn't make it, it's over right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And the entire narrative of the Solheim Cup changes then.
So I think that's a player. Could you mention Allison Lee? I think she could be, you know, next great American player with Lexi Thompson, who's already there, breakout player. Se-young Kim, you wouldn't say she should be a breakout player, but I think she could go to another level and challenge for number one. Se-young Kim is the real deal. She is a power player that knows how to win, and she could challenge NB and Lydia and Stacey for the top spot.
You got any winning prediction for this week in the Bahamas for the Pure Silk?
Se-young is defending her title. She plays really well in windy conditions. She won in windy conditions at the Lotte Championship. I think she'll be formidable and tough to beat.
Lav, give me a winner in San Diego.
Ooh. I have Bill Haas in my one-and-done league.
That's a chalk pick. That's strong. He's got a sneaky good record there.
I think Bill Haas, is at least, if he doesn't win, he's at least going to be up there. I'm going with Bill Haas.
He was like a top 10 last week, right, defending in Palm Springs?
Of course he did.
Yeah. Do the Broncos have any chance, gentlemen? They're currently catching 4.5 out in the desert.
If they injure Cam Newton on the first drive of the game, I think they really have a chance. Otherwise, it could be a blowout.
The Broncos defense, I think they're being underestimated. That is an awesome Broncos defense.
The Broncos defense is being underestimated. It's the top unit in the NFL.
Well, then
defense
why
wins titles, right?
Exactly. So why are everyone saying the Broncos don't have a chance if they're not being underestimated?
Tom Brady almost beat him, and he's basically playing with a JV roster of wideouts.
I'm just glad that Cam Newton joins the illustrious company of Rex Grossman as former University of Florida quarterbacks, making an appearance as starting quarterbacks in the Super Bowl. He's doing Gainesville proud. A couple detours along the way, but that's all right. He's still Gator in mind. All right, well, any other closing thoughts before we hit the road here?
I've got nothing. It should be a great week in San Diego. The weather's going to be 68 and sunny. I hope you boys enjoy the PGA show. And the
load up on the fish tacos. Brigantine's fish tacos.
I always do.
You gonna take your Ricky shoes?
I always do, Randy.
You gotta take them off when TSA pre-check.
I'm gonna have to peel those joggers off if I do wear them.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you again, Ryan Lavner, Randall Mell, for joining us this week for Monday Scramble. We'll be back at it next week to recap the action at the Bahamas, to recap the action at the Farmers Insurance Open, and everything from the PGA Merchandise Show. So once again, I'm Will Gray. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.